So it is said that we all are equally vulnerable to this virus. However, as we have seen, for example, the situation in New York, where Afro-American and Latin communities have been much more affected than others.
Yes.
Here in Toronto, many communities share the city, so many of that people are refugees. Is that affecting the way Toronto is facing this pandemic?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's why they need to collect race-based data. I think certain populations are at higher risk. Probably new immigrants, new immigrants, people in group settings, so group homes, long-term care facilities, as we've seen, prisons, and another population that's really at risk, in Toronto, but also outside of Toronto, is Indigenous populations. There's a large number of undocumented people in Toronto, and they are at risk for multiple reasons because they're often below the radar as far as health care. They're afraid to go in when they get sick, and some of the people have very little income. So even though most of us are, where we have a home, we have regular, some kind of income, even though now it's been stopped, a lot of undocumented people have very, low amounts of income and may continue to work. So if someone's cleaning houses, they may continue to go from house to house. Or if someone is poorer, and they don't have as much many resources, then they may be the ones that are working in the jobs that, other people aren't working in. So I think a lot of new immigrants or people who are underemployed and the undocumented people are at risk. The big risk for me that I'm very concerned about right now is really the Indigenous population, mm-hmm. Especially in northern communities or isolated communities. There's a higher rate of many different diseases. For example, chronic obstructive lung disease or chronic lung disease. There's higher rates of cardiovascular disease, higher rates of obesity, higher rates of diabetes. All of that puts people at risk. But then on top of that, you put in overcrowding, food insecurity. A lot of these communities don't have access to clean water, mm-hmm. and poverty. All of those factors combined, plus in some of these remote communities, you don't have access to a hospital. So if you get sick or if everyone gets sick at the same time, then you have to wait for an air ambulance to come. If there are multiple people sick at the same time, then there could be delays. And so that's what makes that's one of the reasons what makes this situation more dangerous for Indigenous communities.
Yeah, actually, that was one of my questions, because as far as I can see, as I can read in different media outlets, there are not so many cases of coronavirus in our First Nations, but I don't know if that's true or it's just like there are no many tests there.
It's a combination. Right now, a lot of the communities have tried to restrict travel in and out of the communities as a way to prevent themselves. So they have not roadblocks, but they have some limits on who can come into the community. And they're trying to reduce the flights into these communities to essential flights. So that, I think, is very effective in slowing down the virus. So it's like physical distancing, but more in respect to transportation. But I think also a lot of these communities don't have access to testing, and they don't have access to rapid testing. So I think it's been delayed in many of these communities because of the lockdowns and trying to prevent people to go in and out of the communities. But once it gets into the community, because they can't test easily and because of the overcrowding and the lack of screening, like contact tracing, it could spread very, very quickly. And I think that's why I'm working with a group of people, so we're trying to raise the alarm to say that, these communities are at risk and we need to start preparing now, because things could be quite bad in these communities. Just like we should have been preparing for the long-term care situation a long time ago, at least a month or so ago, when we saw what was happening in other parts of the world and in British Columbia, it's no surprise that that so many of the deaths have occurred in long-term care. So it's like now the communities have bought some time because they are they've restricted the travel in and out of the communities, but they're running out of time. And that's why we need to start acting to protect these communities.
Yeah, what kind of attention do these communities have?
Yeah, so they do have the provincial health system. So, you know, or the territorial health system. Mm-hmm. So they have universal health coverage, but some communities may not have a doctor or a nurse or a health center. Mm-hmm. Most of the small communities have a nursing station. So there's usually an access to a nurse. Some of them don't. Some of them have nothing. And so when you get sick, you have to be flown out or, you know, be taken out by ambulance. That's one of the reasons why some of the health in these communities can be lower. But, you know, even if you have a OHIP card, if you can't get out of the community to see a doctor in time, that's a bigger barrier, really.
Oh, okay. So this is the thing with our First Nation communities. But that's the same problem that we have with our people here, like the undocumented people.
That's right.
What can they do to receive some medical attention?
So because of the emergency right now, if someone thinks they have COVID infection or they may have it, then they can go to a testing center and you don't need OHIP now. So mm-hmm. I think it's really important that people know that if they think that they have COVID infection, that they should be tested, because what we don't want are people that aren't coming in because they don't have OHIP. Mm-hmm. And this applies also to new immigrants. And normally there's a 3-month wait for mm-hmm. the immigrants before they get OHIP. That's been dropped. You can apply for OHIP right away. And for the undocumented people, you can go to a COVID testing unit, because if you have COVID infection, it's really important to isolate yourself so you're not spreading it to other people, especially other people that don't have access to OHIP. So it's really important that people know that right now, for the next little while, mm-hmm. you can get tested at the COVID centers. And if you get sick with coronavirus, then you should get help for that. So, because we don't want infections to be under the radar for a while and have massive outbreaks in the undocumented community.
And what about the medicines? Are we going to be allowed to receive them?
I don't know the details. I think that it within the hospital, that whatever treatment is within the hospital is done. But general medications are not. I think just like for everyone else except for children with OHIP, they get coverage, mm-hmm. but everyone else, undocumented or, you know, people with documentation, you know, if you have an insurance plan and you're an adult, then it's covered, but otherwise everyone has to pay out of pocket, and I don't think that's changed.
How would you describe the support that the governments are providing to these vulnerable people?
I think they're trying to find support, but a lot of things are delayed and they seem to be focusing on certain things. Mm-hmm. Like now the focus is on long-term care, which is important and they should be. But this, I mean, we've been talking about it for over a month, saying we need to do something now. You know, these people are vulnerable. You need to put in infection control precautions. There are a lot of people who are marginalized, people who are homeless, people who are living in shelters that are also vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And I think the governments working, or municipal governments, are trying to address those issues. And I think people are trying to do the best they can. But, you know, it's challenging. It's challenging trying to organize and trying to figure out how do you meet the needs of many different populations. But I think, again, if we can be united against, to try to help the Indigenous people, who are the next group that I think are going to be hit in the next little while, then that's something really important that we can do.
How can we help our First Nations and our people, undocumented people, refugees, and other vulnerable communities?
Well, we're working with a bunch of organizations, and in the next little while, we're going to try to get donations going into certain organizations, umbrella organizations, and sponsor a place like COVID, Conquer COVID, who is sending PPE and gowns and masks and those things to indigenous communities. And so, you know, if you're making a donation to an organization like that, then you have, that you say it's for the indigenous communities. So, and there will be other ways of getting funding in to these communities as we start working on that. I think also it's important to get the word out to people that are undocumented to say, to tell them that you can go into a hospital, you can get tested for COVID right now, because this is a different situation. Mm-hmm. I think if you stay tuned in the next little while, a lot of us are working on trying to find out strategies to help the indigenous population. But one major thing that you can do, if you can spread the word, is that we have a petition. It's called Conquer COVID. Sorry, let me take that back. We have a petition. It's called, it's on change.org, so change.org / COVID, COVID-19, Indigenous, INDIGENOUS. So if you can sign your name on Conquer COVID Indigenous, and then that petition is going to go to the government to say, we need more funding, resources, manpower, strategy for Indigenous communities, especially remote and isolated Indigenous communities. And that puts more pressure on to try to get supplies and people in place. So that is really, really an important way you could help us by spreading that word.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Anna, for this interview.
You're welcome.